Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, we return to rock and roll with Mr. Big. Billy Sheehan started Mr. Big after leaving David Lee Roth's Eat 'Em and Smile solo band and singer Eric Martin, hilarious guy. They got stories about how they first met, the early days of the band, their surprise number one hit song, To Be With You. And of course, Billy's got all the scoop about David Lee Roth and what it was like recording and touring with the legendary Van Halen singer in the mid-80s. You know, there was some debauchery going on there. And it's Friday, so you know what that means. It's time for the Duff McKagan Joke of the Week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan. You know, we're getting so popular with these joke things that people are sending us jokes in for me to tell you. So I got to give props to Kevin Mejia for sending this one in. It is this. Did you hear about the guy who invented the door knocker? Huh? He won the Nobel Prize. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Good job, Kevin. I like that. If you guys have, you want to participate, send your jokes to the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and tag Duff McKagan as well at Duff McKagan. Duff will maybe read it to you or he'll come up with his own, some good, some bad jokes like he does every Friday without fail. 2 years of jokes from the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer who calls them in no matter where he is in the world. Thanks, Duff. He's getting ready to release his new solo record, Tenderness, then hit the road with his solo band. That all starts at the end of the month, but we're going to have Duff on Talk is Jericho very soon to tell us all about it. It's a rare interview from a member of Guns N' Roses, but Duff always takes care of us here at Talk is Jericho, and we will get it to you very soon. He's going to be hitting the road soon, and speaking of hitting the road, my boys in Shinedown are headed out next month as well for the Attention World Tour. Tickets are on sale now. Get them at LiveNation.com, and then hear them do Second Chance. How about Devil?
Because it's about to get heavy. It's about to be on. Yeah, man is slinging napalm. So nobody move. Because I was sent to warn you. The devil's in the next room.
And their amazing cover of Leonard Skinner's Simple Man.
So baby, be a simple. Be a simple man.
Do a great job with that one. Brent, the singer, and Zach Myers, Talk is Jericho alumni, actually go in the crowd to do Simple Man. Fozzie toured with them. We had a blast. You will too. You're going to know every song they play. They could release the Chinese phone book, and it's going to go number one. They've got so many hit songs. You're going to love their killer stage show as well. Lots of pyro, lots of fire. You're also going to dig the other bands they're taking with them. Dinosaur Pileup, Broken Hands, and Bowed Flower. I like Bowed Flower. I play them on my Sirius XM show, The Rock of Jericho, all the time. If you haven't heard it, this is a clip from Ghost. Yeah, that's another great tune. Bowed Flower is going to do that song live, and Shinedown is going to do all of their big songs live when they are on tour together this summer. It's going to be a night of rock and roll. You won't forget the Super Bowl of rock and roll. Get your tickets now at LiveNation.com. That's LiveNation.com. Go check it out. Shinedown, it's a night you're never going to forget. And you're not going to forget this show either, because The Rock continues with the great Billy Sheehan and the amazing Eric Martin from Mr. Big right now on Talk is Jericho. So I'm here with, in Mr. Big's dressing room with Billy and Eric. Eric went to try and find some whiskey.
Yeah, it's a special bottle that showed up tonight, and I think he's looking for that one.
True rock and roll. But I wanted you mentioning something that a lot of people don't know. We're here, over here doing kind of a cavalcade of shows. There's some festivals. There's some headliners.
A cavalcade.
But the one constant is it's really, really hot.
Oh, my God. And there's no... We're in a hotel with no air conditioning.
Every time.
Mind-blowing.
It's unbelievable.
And, I can't. You're laying in bed and there's like you can feel the sweat dripping off your forehead.
It's the most uncomfortable thing.
Unreal.
Because we've had that too, where we showed up at hotels and it will say online because our tour manager looks. I'm sure yours does as well. Air conditioning.
Yeah.
And you get there and it's like we don't have no air conditioning.
No, it's a fan. That's air.
Or you want the air conditioning? Open the window. We're just talking about the summer tours, about how hot it is over here, air conditioning in the hotels.
It's been incredible. Musical climate, but the climate has just been crazy lately.
The actual
Probably the hottest bunch of tours that we've done in a long, long time.
Yeah, really hot.
I'm not losing any weight at all.
It's the hottest European summer in 100 years. So
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
100 years.
Yeah.
Because we were over in Slovenia, we played with you guys, and you came over on the stage, you're like, it's hotter than Brazil over here.
Yeah,
it's like Brazil level heat, right? But then the problem is when you get off stage, how do you get your gear dry for the next show?
Ferments is what happens.
It's ridiculous.
That fermentation process is quite odorous.
Odorous. Not onerous, odorous.
I remember that show, that was our first show. And, you guys did your thing. We played our gig. And I'm a big rock and roll fan.
Mm.
And I'm kind of an Accept fan, but not like you guys, right?
Right, yeah, we loved Accept, yeah.
But you were totally busting my balls when I'm having a couple pops, and I came down in the pit, and...
In Hungary,
yeah. And I'm raising my fist, I'm going, yeah, balls to the wall, rocking at you. And you look at me and you go, dude, you just got here.
Well,
like, you're trying to...
But what happened was the singer looked over just as Eric got here, and went, oh, Eric, how are you? And I was like... Dude, I've been standing the whole time. He never looked over here once, and you've been over here 3 seconds, and you get the credit of like the bro. You know when you see your bros watching from side stage?
I looked at you for a second. I went like, did he just imply that I was a pussy just for a second?
No, I did not. Like, I did not do
implied.
That.
Implied. But it was
but you guys just finished your meet and greet. You do them after the shows.
That's like our after show pass. But we do a meet and greet. That's like an official one before the show.
Gotcha.
Which is... kind of a people pay for that,
right?
And I've never really been too much into that, and so and I always tell people I do a free meet and greet every night out by the bus outside out the venue. So
you kind of get it a little bit. If you try to make as special as you can, because I've been to a couple meet and greets with my children to see like kid rock and roll bands, mm-hmm. like the Jonas Brothers,
right.
when they were kind of big and stuff, and NSYNC and all that stuff. And you just take a quick picture, and then you're shuffled out the door. There's nothing going on. Now, there is one thing, like you paying this money. I mean, shit, how many? We play four or five songs today. You play four or five songs every meet and greet.
Yeah.
You go out, you shake hands, kiss babies, the whole bit.
Yeah, we sign
it,
everything.
It is kind of worth something.
We take care of them.
And look, and that money, like when people go, oh, yeah, we got all the money in the world. And I'm like, but that money does pay for the tour bus.
The economics of the situation, a lot of people don't understand. It's a very expensive tour, as I'm sure you know.
Of course.
And you got to try to make the best money you can. So... we appreciate when people do pay for the meet and greet very much. We do our best to take care of them.
And you give them something, like you said, like a mini concert. Because we've been working with this for years. We used to go out for dinner with the VIPs just trying to do something different. Because like you said, it is kind of like people go, well, how come, meet and greet should be free? Well, they should be free, but music should be not free.
No.
And that's kind of the trade over. Like you mentioned, Billy, you're not so much into the meet and greet thing, or you don't think people should pay. But it's also now this whole, and you guys know it too, all the money that you used to make or revenue from album sales.
They're not there anymore.
That's gone, right?
Yeah. So, but, just as an assist or an aside or an addition to that, I always go out afterwards by the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a huge out of control crowd there. And I do my own security. So everybody, settle down. I'm going to sign everything and take every photo. Don't worry. So everybody back off. We're cool.
Take your time.
Me and Eric stay out there sometimes for an hour. signing and taking care of people. And then also, it's also, we got great friends. Tonight, all the people here tonight were all their after show passes. Were people we've known for years.
I know everybody's name. Yeah. I even, you know, I was like, oh, look at Claire, Ayaka. You know, like, oh, you're from Hungary, Japan, Taiwan's here.
Yeah.
Like, all kinds of folks.
Yeah, people from all countries all over the world come. And it's really.
You see that. And for you guys, too, there's a lot of, at least the last couple of days, there's been a contingency of Japanese fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you guys, I remember I was working quite regularly in Japan in the 90s.
Yeah.
And this is when you guys were playing Budokan.
Yeah.
Constantly. And I was like, gosh, Mr. Big is playing still Budokan in Japan in 1996. Do.
Awesome.
What is it about Japan that you guys just connected so well?
Well, Billy can give you the gigantic answer. I think it's the fact that we grew up with these guys. You know, like we started out in 1989, but Billy went over there in 1988 and sort of campaigned and said, like, Mr. Big has come and I got this new band.
Oh, really?
And, oh, yeah, yeah. And we've been campaigning for years, right? And before all cell phones or... emails and all that, we were writing, you know, handwritten letters.
Snail mail letters for days.
Like, oh, just sitting in the room and just crank out letters and get people involved. You know, I mean, we did the meet and greet thing. We did so many interviews.
In store.
Oh, so much stuff.
We did a thing, where do we play? Where we played, it was about 10,000 people and we shook everybody's hand at the end of the show.
Dude, oh, yeah, wow. It's like you, it was me and Pat.
They split us into two groups.
Me and Pat on one side and you and Paul on the other side of the theater. And I want to say they, on that particular gig, that might have been like a 5,000 seater or something like that.
Yeah, I thought it was 8 to 10, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, wait. You're splitting hairs. Yeah. Oh, higher. Oh, the kids went here higher.
Show business, baby. I think it was 15,000 that day.
Anyway,
20,000.
Bottom line was you're shaking a lot of people's hands in Japan.
We're actually getting dizzy because as people went by, hi, thanks for that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Dude, it was crazy. After a while, I mean, like, the hand was kind of hurting a little.
I know. I had a little sore spot on my hand.
Had you been there though?
But that wasn't from the...
Hello.
Nice setup. You're welcome.
Softball. Had you been there before though, Billy?
I went in 88 to do bass clinics with Yamaha.
And
so for my walk-in music, I played the Mr. Big demo. We hadn't even recorded yet, like a record yet. So I played the demo. And you can hear, like, they just shot video of the whole thing. On the video in the background, you hear Mr. Big. Who is that? And I announced to the audience every night. I did 3 clinics. One at NHK Hall, sold out clinic, and then we went.
And that's
went
a big
back,
room.
We actually went back and played it, but it was a crazy situation with so many people. But we started the ball rolling there, and our manager Herbie Herbert was friends with the major promoter there, so we came in. We did our first time. We did a typical Tokyo, Osaka, Nagoya. Then we spread out a little bit more. We ended up playing all over Japan. So most bands go there, play just Tokyo or just Tokyo, Osaka. We did in the north, Sapporo and Sendai and the West Coast.
Kyoto.
All the places on the West Coast. And all the way down to Kagoshima in the south with a volcano. Our plane got diverted because the volcano was erupting. We had a, so we played, about 8, 10, 12 cities every time.
If you can get that many cities in Japan, you know you're popular. Because like amazing. You said, most bands don't
We're
do that.
We're very grateful. And the fans are amazing.
So I'm go ahead, sorry.
No, but the cliche, the Spinal Tap cliche, that you go to Japan, they're going to love you no matter what. It's not true. Uh-huh. They watch closely. I would always tell people, just take a Phillips head screwdriver and open up your VCR and look how finely that is put together. That's how tight they are. So when they're watching you, if it's not awesome, they're not coming back. Mm-hmm. A lot of American bands went over there and played once and never got asked back again.
Never played back.
So when we went there, we hit it as hard as we hit it anywhere. Same show we would do in New York City, we're going to do. And, you know, we didn't slough it off at all.
Glory, glory. Keep going. Hallelujah.
So we really, we hit it hard. We hit it hard. And we made a lot of friends right up front. And like Eric said before, we get like literally piles of letters and emails. And inside the envelope was stationery, addressed stamped envelope, and a pen. Mm-hmm. So you could do everything you needed to answer them.
Yeah.
So we'd answer them and stick a pick in there and, you know, just make sure everybody got taken care of.
And the most prettiest words. I mean, they're so
amazing.
Lovely.
Poetic.
Yeah, they write English.
You are my treasure.
Yeah. Oh,
you
unbelievable.
Are, you know, like way
touching.
Beyond... you know, you rock.
Right, you rock, dude. But yeah, the Japanese understanding of English is so romantic and so, like you mentioned, so beautifully written. Yeah. You know,
they mix it up sometimes. Like, you kick ass. You guys are smoking. And then eventually we get, you guys smoke ass.
Yeah. They do like to get messed with that.
You appreciate it. You want a super sentiment.
Like, remember that we were backstage and we saw this sign and it said, no smorking or something like that.
No smorking.
Yeah.
The first time I went there was for wrestling. It was in 91.
And wrestler?
I wrestled.
Woo-hoo!
So my partner was Lance. It was Chris and Lance. We were called, I think, like the Thrill Seekers or something. And the first day we go and the card, like the set list of the show was on the wall.
Yeah.
And my partner Lance was so upset. He's like, we're not on the show tonight. I was like, what? It's our first day. We're not on the show. So I went and looked we were in the main event and it was instead of Chris and Lance, said Kleiss and Runts. And I said, dude, we're on the show. I said, if you're not Lance tonight, you're Runts.
Right.
I'm Kleiss.
Their L's and R's are a little messed up. Yeah. Like, even, you know, Paul used to be in this band called Racer X. Right. And it was like Laser X.
Yeah, Laser X. Did you put together Mr. Big, Billy? Because I'm thinking, like, you came right out of the Roth band, and there's lots that we want to talk about that. I know you got great stories, but you doing this thing with Steve I and Billy Sheehan and Bissonette with like matching leads and all that
stuff.
Come straight out and find Paul Gilbert, who's the other.
And when I knew Paul already. He'd come to see my band, Talus, and back in Pittsburgh, and then he'd moved out to LA. And then I also knew Pat Torpy. But of course, the key, I had to find a great singer.
Right.
And so I heard a couple guys, nothing quite floated my boat, and then Mike Varney, a guy who's famous for
Shrapnel Records,
a lot of people.
Yeah,
he goes, I got this guy Eric Martin. I go, oh, he's playing for me, and I go, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I wanted a guy like a Paul Rogers, Steve Marriott, like soulful, but hard, and so sure enough, I got in touch with Eric, went up to San Francisco, met him, and then I kind of Paul and Pat waiting in the wings. Okay, I got a singer now. Come on, you guys, and we put it together from there. It was
because you had been doing stuff for years on your own, Eric, at the time, right? And you mentioned Herbie Herbert. He's a famous manager of Journey and all these big bands. And
he actually managed me. And when Billy gave me a call, I think maybe that's the reason why you gave me a call, because you knew I had Herbie Herbert in the wings, right?
Well, it was a factor.
Exactly.
It pushed it over the line.
But I had, I started in like 1980. I had this band called 415, and then we later changed it to the Eric Martin Band. The band didn't like it. I thought it was catchy.
It's a hell of a name if you're Eric Martin,
But we got signed to Elektra Records in 1983. We did an album called Sucker for a Pretty Face.
Great record.
With Kevin Elson, who produced our biggest records. First four.
That's right.
And all the Journey hits. He was, you know, he started out, he was a live sound engineer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. He was on the plane.
He was on the plane.
Yeah.
Was he really?
Yes, he was.
The plane that crashed.
Yes, he was.
Wow.
It was incredible. So I did this record, and it was a great band. It was Troy Licata from Tesla. John Nyman from Y&T. We were kind of like the poor man's Night Ranger. We had like two double, you know, guitar players and stuff, and it was a great record. We toured with ZZ Top, Night Ranger, actually, and did our thing. And then the band kind of broke up for a little while, and then that was it. And then I got signed to Capitol Records as a solo artist. Beat around for a great many years doing soundtracks, and I didn't really have an identity. I was kind of a rocker, and then I was also an R&B kind of singer. And it was 1988, maybe.
The call came in.
Yeah, call came in. Mike Varney has been a great friend of mine for years and years and years.
Kind of a visionary at the time, right?
Oh, he discovered all these great guitar players, but he himself is an awesome guitar player. So he gave me a call and he said, hey, what do you think about being in a band again? You know, you're a solo artist, but what do you think about being in a band with like a guy like, you know, Billy Sheehan? I'm like, is that the guy who, you know, just as all wacky, you know, and then David Lee Roth videos. Or, you know, I mean, like, dude, tightest pants in the history of freaking the world. Anyway, is that that guy? And they go, yeah. And I go, I don't know. He wants me in his band. They go, yeah, he does. He's on the phone right now. He was notorious for putting
Mike
like those.
Put you on hold and then call someone and not tell them. Oh. They do that all the time.
So like, you know, I mean, like, granted, I just sang tonight, so I have a little kind of gravel in my throat. But I was like, I go, hey man, how you doing? It's like, hey, this is Billy Sheehan.
How's it going on there?
Platinum recording artist Billy Sheehan.
He heard me sing this movie soundtrack. It was a movie called...
I Can't Stop the Fart.
Yeah, it was a movie called Teachers.
Oh,
with Nick Nolte. It was back in the 80s. And it was me and Neil Sean that wrote the song. And he heard that, Can't Stop the Fire. And it was pretty high, balls to the wall.
Great track.
Yeah, I can't! You know, that kind of thing. My voice was really high back then. I think my balls dropped back in like when I was 45. But and then that was it. Him and I did a couple demos together. Look at me with my poor mic technique. I'm talking to you like a conversation.
You're a singer, damn it. Here, man. Keep it this far from your mouth.
I know,
that's
sorry.
What you learn in radio class.
Sorry, folks at home, all over the world and Canada. All right. So we were like hustlers, man. We were going to every record company, shopping these demos that we made. And I'd written a song called Rock and Roll Over and Big Love, and he had written a song like Whole World's Gonna Know, and so another one that I can't remember what it was, but it was the making of our first album, and even we'd written other songs together. I mean,
Stranded on a Desert Island, that was one of them.
Stranded on a Desert Island.
That never showed up anywhere.
Stupid ass title, but it was great tune. You know,
chant that at a show. Stranded on a desert island. Stranded on a desert island.
I heard it chant that.
It kicked ass, actually. But don't shoot.
Oh,
the songwriter
good.
Messenger.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we beat the street and we went to every record company and blah blah blah. Nobody was like, nah, 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 we get it. And then we got. I'm going to hand this over to Billy. Then we got Paul Gilbert, and like Billy said, he kind of knew Paul because Paul was a huge fan of Billy's band Talas, and I
remember him standing in the audience in front of me.
Wow,
I remember, this is tall kid. I go, who's this beanpole?
He's like 6'5" or something, right? Yeah,
he's got an inch or two on me.
We didn't.
And he's also taller.
There you go. Ba bum bum. Thank you. Hello.
My broker's EF button.
Try the veal
all the week. So we. So, you know, it was just him and I in the beginning for a good couple months, you know, writing songs and stuff. But we got Paul Gilbert. The story goes, and I'm just quoting from all the magazine stuff.
From Circus Magazine.
I know. Yeah, Cream.
Yeah.
Billy Judge, a guitar player.
At Casares.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You feel it because I wasn't there. You're looking at me like, you're not... No, that's not right. That's not right, man.
Shut up, Eric. God, I'm not. No, they had a guitar thing. It was me and a White Snake bass player. I forgot his name, though.
Bob Diesel.
Neil Murray?
Neil Murray.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And
nailed it.
Very good.
I'm a rock and roll.
You got it.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, the little judge panel there. Basically went there for free drinks and hang out and meet girls.
There used to be girls there, yeah.
And there were some girls and there were some drinks. But there was guitar players also. And so Paul came up, and I told everybody, watch this guy, because he had opened for Talas at one point back in Pittsburgh, and I knew he was a pretty great player. And Paul went up there and just was, it was funny, too. And he purposely didn't do any hammer-ons, because every guitarist in the world was doing them. Just went up there, and at the end, rock and roll, wow! So, of course, he won the thing. I don't know what he won, like an amp or something, or... You know, some Taco Bell certificates, whatever. So I knew him enough to speak with him and stuff like that. So I did finally contact him for the band. And then Pat Torpey, on the day that I left the Eat 'Em and Smile band, during the morning before I went to the meeting where all hell broke loose, I went to a recording session with myself, Pat Torpey, Dave Amato, who's
from REO Speedwagon.
He's in REO now, yeah.
And Brett Tuggle, who was a keyboard player for Daily Roth, now is with everybody, Stevie Nicks, and is
one of those guys.
Yeah. Did you know Pat?
No, I didn't know.
Like, at all. You met him at that session.
Yeah, Brett Tuggle introduced me. That's why when Brett was at the memorial,
oh, right,
it was quite, you know, he was the guy who introduced me. So we're all there. It's bass, drums, guitar, keyboards, all of us singing. I'm thinking, hey, this might work. I've had it with that David Lee. Sorry, Dave.
Come on now.
You know, I was just easy. Kind of up to here with that. So that's how I met Pat. He was an amazing singer. And then I hadn't heard him play drums. We went to a NAMM show, and he played with some other band. It was just great. And then he played with a Knack. So me and Paul went out to see him one night with the Knack. Just I told Paul, I got this great drummer. You got to love him. Okay. So we go out to Madame Wong's in L.A., and we're sitting there waiting for the show to start, and the waitress comes over, almost like I paid her to do it, but I didn't even know this girl. She goes, hi, what are you guys doing? We're here to see the band. Oh, yeah. Oh, this drummer is amazing.
It's fate.
Perfect. Thank you. Paul, I swear to God, I didn't tell her to say that. And Pat got up there and killed, you know, power pop, great, you know, just exactly right up the alley, what kind of thing that Paul likes to. So we knew right away Pat was the man. And
he was amazing. I mean, you know, we auditioned one guy, this guy.
One other guy.
Bobby Urechica. Remember Urechica. That name, like, stuck with me. But Urechica. Bobby Urechica. He was like the Pete Best of Mr. Big.
Excellent drummer, but
excellent drummer. But he just didn't have that je ne sais quoi, 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 quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
Pat came in, played played his ass off on the songs that we had. His tone of his drums all resonated. I mean, like, amazing tone.
And he had been in bar bands for decades.
He was a journeyman, right?
Oh, yeah. We have almost a parallel existence where you know, got out of high school, got into bands, played every bar, high school dance, everything. You know, so the stories we both had as a result of all that were pretty amazing. But
great singer, too.
That's what it's. Oh, you took the words out of my mouth. His voice, when he first started singing, I was like, I wasn't jealous, but I was like, jealous kind of.
But it's good to have a guy like that in your band, though, dude.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
It was so good. And it was fat. It had a thick tone to it, where I'm thinking, thick harmonies are going to be dope. I mean, okay, dope. Like, I'm like, what am I like?
That's rad, dude.
What am I, the Sugar Hill Gang? sorry, kids. At home. Sorry.
Google it, guys.
You know, this is after the show, and, you know, we've been teetotaling. So, but Pat did his thing, and we immediately, it was like we all had a nod. It was like, not like, this is the guy. It was like,
he's a grandmaster at the drums right away.
We were channeling, and Pat was like, okay, I guess I'm in.
It was almost an ipso facto supergroup the same way that the Roth Band was, and it was this extension of, like, I don't know if it was, like I said, we can talk about it in a bit, but it was a conscious effort, but you guys made, like, crazy riff-tastic music, but in a very accessible, like a song like Going Crazy or a song like Yankee Rose. Yeah. You did that with Addicted to That Rush and Colorado Bulldog on the first record. But but you had found this magic formula.
And that was really the goal, is to have, it was Humble Pie, Bad Company, Free, Spooky Tooth, those bands that had a soulful singer. They did some playing, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why when To Be With You was a hit, people came up to me and Paul and said, oh, you guys must be bummed out. I'm like, bummed out? Are you kidding me? This is the greatest thing that ever happened to us. You're the number one single.
Right.
Playing acoustic guitar, simple bass, Paul McCartney bass lines. Woo!
Yeah.
Fantastic. It was amazing. So, to be painted into a corner, you must riff your ass off at all times at the highest speed possible. That's crazy. You know, we didn't want to be typecast in that way. So To Be With You was what a life changer.
Just huge, right? What game changer. And it's interesting because I was just did 3 seconds of research, which I pride myself here on Talk Is Jericho. Only the best.
Deep.
But I saw two things on To Be With You that really blew my mind. One was, it was the third single released.
Yep.
Yeah.
And two, it was the last song on the record. So that tells me, was that even, did they just let you put it on just because, oh, whatever, just do it?
Oh, there's a whole freaking movie on that one, man.
Unbelievable.
Can we tell this in a nutshell? I mean, like, I know you're going to do the lion's share of it. You should kind of tell the world a little bit about what, like, Herbie did for To Be With You. But, our record company at the time, Atlantic Records, they put out these three songs, and they were going to essentially drop us.
Right, because it was like the rock, like Addicted to the Rock, Screen Sisters.
They just didn't get us.
Yeah.
They, you know, we were trying to build a career here, and... And we were so good. I mean, we've been, for all our whole lives as a band, I mean, we've been really consistent live, and we're a great live band.
Great live band, yeah.
And we made some damn good records, but we campaigned or toured or whatever you want to say forever.
Open just for to Rush, get the, open get for the Scorpions.
And people dig right. us, you know? So, yeah, I mean, two tours with Rush.
Dude, I mean, come on.
We did one Rush tour, and then we didn't know what we were going to do the next time, and Getty and Alex were like, oh, you got to come back out. We're going to write us. We're going to do an album. We did the Presto tour, and then we're going to do an album, Roll the Bone. We're writing, that's going to...
Roll the Bones, yeah.
Neil, what's it called? I think it's going to be called Roll the Bones. Okay, and then... And we're going to get Mr. Big and Eric Johnson and a couple other Primus and do it, but we're going to have the lion's share, Mr. Big. It was unbelievable.
That's huge.
Bryan Adams.
Oh, Bryan Adams is great.
You guys toured with Bryan Adams?
Yeah.
Underrated guy in the history of rock and roll.
What a great.
I mean, how many great songs does Bryan Adams have? People don't talk about him.
Underrated.
Do
they talk about it now? Because they talked about it a lot back in the day.
But they should be talking about him the same way they talk about like a Springsteen or something along those lines. For me.
I agree.
Right?
I totally agree.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I love him.
In this day and age, underrated.
I feel you. Bryan Adams is a brilliant. Bryan Adams and his affiliation with that writer, Jim Vallance. Mm-hmm. Those two, I mean, man, he is effortless when he sings too. He's got that gravel thing, but he's effortless when he plays live.
Summer, great song, right?
Yeah, come on, man, come on.
The band too.
So you toured with all these guys, but you're not really getting any respect from your own record company. Because we're talking about the lower
rungs of the label, we're all our friends.
The soldiers of the label were great.
But the upper echelon. And so when
well, they just didn't get it. They didn't know
it. When To Be With You came out, it started to move up the charts due to the efforts of our manager, Herbie, and his connection with a FM radio guy named Jeff McCluskey, who ran FM radio around the country. He was, you know, was working on it, too. He believed in the band also. They actually fought us. So a radio station would get a choice of two songs from Atlantic Records. So we can't play two Atlantic Records songs. We've got to pick one or the other. We'll do one CBS song, one Atlantic Records song, one Warner Brothers song, one Epic, whatever.
Yeah,
So Phil Collins and Mr. Big would show up, and they dropped Phil Collins and put Mr. Big on.
Oh.
And the label was, I was livid. How dare you? We had a Phil Collins song we're trying to break. What are you, Mr. Big? What the? You know, so we thought, what the? Unbelievable. So they fought it and fought it and fought it. And it was like top 40, top 30, top 20, breaking in a little bit more. Suddenly it sounded like number three.
Yeah.
We're up against Prince and Michael Jackson for the number one spot.
It's crazy. Because this is not just rock radio. This is Billboard.
Yeah, this is Billboard. This is the
pop charts. Yeah.
This is it. Bang, we got it.
Wow.
And then
we had like this, but you know, like unbeknownst to us, it was, I mean, like we're a rock band. We don't read Billboard magazine. I mean, like, we've never, you know, nobody got a subscription to Billboard magazine. But I mean, all we got our information from the video for To Be With You on MTV. We didn't know anything about hits of the world or who, you know, where, what. And we didn't know that, like, in other countries, like, 15 other countries.
15 countries are number one, right?
Yeah.
Number one.
And it's climbing up the charts everywhere else, you know? I mean, it was like unbelievable to us. It was overwhelming.
It was pretty amazing. And then when it finally got to number one, Atlantic Records said, oh, we knew all
of
this. We were behind this record.
Always the case, right?
The band.
Always the case.
I know. And I don't want to, I'm sure they did the work, but they really didn't believe in us for a long, long time. But you know, it's ironic and it's predictable. Every album after that, it was like we put it out and we did our best. I mean, we write great songs, but you know, we write for ourselves, but you know, we write for the fans too. And I wasn't trying to write the next To Be
pandering.
With You.
We're
yeah,
not
of course.
You know, To Be With You, I wrote when I was 16 years old. And then when I got it with Mr. Big...
Hold on a second. You wrote that when you were 16 years old?
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, the majority of it. And then when I got in the band, you know, we kind of perfected it a little bit. But, like, it was simple. It was Beatles. It was, like, a dessert at the end of an album. It was, like, not a big deal.
The 11th track.
Roll the credits.
Yeah.
Album's over. Everybody sing along.
That's always, like, the throwaway track on the album. That's the track 10. I mean, like, track 11.
But we all knew. I mean, like, when I played it... I first started in the band, I lived in the Bay Area. I'm the only guy that lived in San Francisco, and everybody else lived in L.A. Now, you know, Billy lives at 2, 21, 12, 12, no, 21, 12, Nashville's court. No, he lives in Nashville. Paul lives in Portland.
Talking about now.
But back in the day, they all lived in L.A., and I always had to drive up or down. What is it?
Down.
To L.A. all the time. Anyway,
it's interesting, though, because it's the same style as, like, I know you guys just did a tour with Extreme, which is a perfect kind of almost sister band to Mr. Big in the same situation with More Than Words, where I know, like, there was a lot of people, like, when I, at that time frame, I was a, well, still am a huge rock and roll fan, knew Mr. Big, and there was a lot of girls
like,
and other
you're
people.
Like a historian.
Kind of rockologist.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were like, oh, to be with you, are they like a pop band? I was like, no, they're a rock and roll band. They'll blow your fucking mind, dude. Like, really? And then they would go looking for like other songs, but it would be just like all these crazy, amazing tunes. And it was the same with Extreme. Like More Than Words came out, but it was part of your catalog. But like you said, it wasn't what you were all about.
That's what I'm saying. There was a time. Let me get you the thing now that I remember it.
He's got his vignette
whiskey,
back.
My whiskey haze popped
vignette.
Out. But me and Paul, you know, I lived with Paul when I was in the Bay, in L.A., hanging with the band. And I remember, you know, like,
Hot orange juice.
I wrote the song, I played Paul this To Be With You song, and he goes, hey, that sounds like the Beatles. That's pretty cool.
He loves the Beatles.
He does.
Loves.
I played the for Beatles. Billy, and he goes,
and I do a Paul McCartney bass line at the end of the second verse. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. And Paul goes, Billy goes, that's a hit. And I go, and then we went, what the? It's a hit. Like, we didn't know what it hit.
Will they play it on KNAC?
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's exactly what it was. And
there's no hits on KNAC.
And Kevin Elson, you know, who did all the Journey stuff too, he was like, yeah, man, that's a sleeper hit.
Yeah, yeah.
But wow. We're going to stick it on the end of the record. Anyway, that's my point. But the whole thing with like Extreme too, you know, we just toured with him in Australia.
That's a great bill.
And Pat Badger was telling me the same thing, that it's like, it's a fluke. Mm. We put the song To Be With You out. It wasn't like, hey, let's get like some guy in the Brill Building.
You never do.
Give me a bouncy C. Let's write it.
Give me a C, a bouncy C. And whatever the hell else you got.
Exactly. So same thing with More Than Words. It was just a song.
Yeah.
And then
one of many in the catalog, and it's the one that struck.
Okay, that's my story. Sad but true.
Here's a story. You want a story? 14 years old, I started playing bass guitar. And we mentioned Circus Magazine. In the back of the magazine, there was an ad for Billy Sheehan's Bass Method. And you could buy a cassette that had a picture of you drawn on it. And
it was somebody else doing it.
It wasn't you?
It was not me. That's right.
Did you even get any royalties from anything?
No.
Wow.
That used to happen a lot.
Because there was a song from Talos called Sink Your Teeth Into That, and it starts, I'm not sure, I think it's Sink Your Teeth. Ding, 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 ding. Boom, boom, boom. Those are the harmonics.
I know, I'm a fan.
Okay, I practiced for weeks. Boom, 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 boom. I totally bought the Billy Sheehan bass method, and you're telling me that wasn't even you?
No.
But
it's okay. I mean, somebody that heard me knew enough to put down my shtick.
I bought that.
But I remember that was back in the day. How do you shut down a bootlegger?
You
got to call him and see if he'll maybe stop.
So funny.
We didn't even know what to do.
My childhood.
And I was kind of glad that, hey, I'm in Circus Magazine.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Some kid in Winnipeg, Manitoba bought that cassette and learned how to play that song.
Is that where you're from?
Yeah, I'm from Winnipeg.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Northerner just like you.
So did you know Max Webster?
I didn't know them, but I knew of them, obviously. Okay. And I was, Max Webster was done by the time that I kind of started getting into rock and roll, but Kim Mitchell was huge.
A Kimball logo.
Kimball logo.
One of the greatest records ever made.
Very, very cool. You get it. And Kim never had any steam in the States really at all, except for Might As Well Go For Soda, but Patio Lanterns and Lager and Ale. And
we almost had Kids in Action.
We almost did
Eat It a Smile record.
Really?
Yes.
That's the Max Webster.
Look at the track sheet.
We almost did that song.
We almost did it too.
You brought it over to there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Eat 'Em and Smile days. One of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. This is not to be a smear session. Like honestly, like when that band came out, because we were all big Van Halen fans
huge.
At the time, and when they split. I was like on Team Roth because I was a Roth guy. Like I loved Eddie too.
Dave made a funny comment one time. I guess there was some movie where some guys barricaded themselves on an FM station and the cops showed up and they were like a big confrontation.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Airheads.
Yeah, yeah. And they said, and it yelled out to the cop to see, you know, I'm not a cop. Okay. All right. When Van Halen broke up, whose side were you on? Old Sammy Hagar's cop. So a million things like that.
But at the time, that was the big gig to get. Like Dave Lee Roth solo was a huge deal because he was hot off of the California Girls and the Crazy from the Heat.
And,
so
and the 1984 record, which is the
absolutely.
So,
one,
so you might have yeah. Do you mind if I field this question?
Please.
Go ahead.
It's the Chris and Eric show. so did they audition like Mr. Big? I mean, did they audition artists to play?
Did Roth?
No. David Lee Roth.
No, I got called. I got the call from Dave and...
Right off the bat.
There was no audition.
No.
Because there was a rumor going around that you were actually talked about being in Van Halen at a certain point. Is that true?
That is true.
Wow.
Actually, there's two people at this table that's true about.
We still love you, Mikey.
That's right. True. Yeah, yeah.
And I think in retrospect, now that all is come and gone and everything like that, I think they thought, speculation, mm-hmm. totally, here's this kid from Podunk, Buffalo, New York. We could pay him $1,500 a week. No publishing, no merch, no nothing. And he'll feel like he died and went to heaven.
$1,500 a week?
And now, because Michael was
getting... Can I get that now?
Michael was getting 25% of everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Michael is an awesome player.
Yes.
Incredible singer. I got bootlegs in the early days. He's killing. He's amazing. So I was torn always because I love Van Halen. I'm like, Ed, Mike... Dave, Al, that's what I want. Like John, Paul, George, Ringo.
Right.
But I was also very, you know, flattered and grateful that they considered me. But the underneath that is all, well, they probably could have gotten me pretty cheap.
Well, of course, to be in Van Halen, I'm sure.
I would have done it.
So Roth calls you directly and says, Billy, I'm putting together a solo band. I want you in it.
He said, Billy, I'm doing a movie. I want you to be in the movie.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. This is a first for me. You got to check this out. You got to get right into it.
So there was a movie, and he did it as a cover story so that if anybody got approached, no one would say anything about the band. So when I got to actually go to Dave's house, my first day of the Yngwie Talas tour in L.A., they came and picked me up and went out to Dave's house, and he said, yeah, there's a movie, but we're going to do a band. I want to put a band together, you and me. We'll find a guitar player. We'll find a drummer, and let's do it. And I said, because I always said to everybody, my band Talas was very near and dear to me. I'm never leaving Talas unless it's Van Halen. So Dave said, you want to be with me? And I said, close enough.
See you later, boys.
Aisle or window. I'll take a window seat. Thank you. All the way to Los Angeles.
So all that... those videos that he was doing, you know, with the...
California Girls?
Yeah.
Well, that was before that.
Yeah.
Okay, but like you did say something about like some of those videos that he was doing, that was kind of for the movie, right? Like the advertising?
No, that was his
Because he wrote a script for the movie. There actually is a script out there called Crazy from the Heat.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe that was
an original copy.
There you go.
I got to go on eBay and see what it's worth.
So So how was like how
40 bucks.
You can sell it to our tour manager.
How was it for you, Billy, first meeting Steve Vai and starting to play with him? Like, were you guys in a rehearsal space and like, okay, here we go? Or
I ran into Steve. He was on Relativity Records, which Dallas was on, and they were trying to hook me and Steve up together. So I spoke to him once time about possibly doing a, you know, some thing together.
Mm.
So I was out in L.A. and Steve lived in L.A. and he was out at the Rainbow Bar and Grill, and I ran in, we're talking, hanging out. I go, Steve, there's a... Now, I'm out there with David Lee Roth. I can't tell anybody.
Right, yeah, yeah.
The whole Talas Yngwie tour, I'd already joined with Dave, and I couldn't say a word. So I said, you know, it was a weird situation. So I got done with that tour, went back to L.A., and I said to Steve, there's a situation there. You might be interested in. He goes, I think I know what it is. I go, I think you might know what it is, too.
Yeah.
So sure enough, Ted Templeman, who's going to be the producer, also knew of Steve. So Ted and I spoke, and I said, Steve is just great. Plus, he's got a sense of humor.
Mm.
You know, that's Frank Zappa joking.
And you needed that to play with Roth, because that's Roth's thing, too.
Yeah, you got some serious guy playing his you know, the Paganini etudes. That's not going to quite work. He needs some Zappa-esque jokes.
Yeah, some wackiness.
And so, sure enough, we
brought
Steve in.
You were a clever guy.
The original guy was Steve Stevens that Dave wanted.
Wow.
But Steve was busy with Billy Idol's, and I said to Dave, I know another Steve you might be interested in. And then he gave Steve and I the quest. He goes, boys, go out and find me a drummer. And we went out. We hired like We put an ad in the Music Connection magazine, and we had about 40 people showed up at SAR Studios. And some people kind of figured out that what it was for. Some people didn't. It was still pretty under the radar. And sure enough, as soon as Greg Bissonette walked in, we knew he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
We instantly knew. Just the moment we set eyes on him. Steve, look at me. I looked at him. That's him. He didn't even hear him play. We just knew it was him. And he sat down. It was just a ball of enthusiasm. Every other drummer came in and said, well, this isn't my kid. And if I had my snare, you know, the cymbal isn't supposed to. You know, in traffic here, it was really, get out of here. We instantly out. Greg came in and said, and goes, what do you want? Give us some of this. Okay, here you go. So he was the man.
That's what he had told me. You had told me this before, Bill, that you said like there were so many people coming in that if anybody complained about anything, you would show them the door.
So there's a complaint, you're gone.
Like the traffic was bad. See you later.
Yeah.
Now, is it true? I think you might have told me this too, that one of the people that you really dug was a girl.
Roxy Petrucci.
Roxy Petrucci from Vixen.
Yeah.
And Madam X.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
What happened with that?
Well, she was a dear friend at the time because she was close friends with a woman named Karen Valdez, who was the Van Halen secretary. When Dave left, all the personnel went with Dave.
A lot of
people don't know that, but when crew,
Accountants,
secretaries, office people, everybody went with Dave. So Karen was the number one go-to girl. And she was friends with them, so we hung out a bit. And it was funny when we got back to rehearsal. We said, Dave, one of the people we tried out was a girl, Roxy. And I saw him in his eyes. He's thinking, I know how to screw Alex Van Halen so badly. I got a girl that can play better than. But he said, I better, you know. So he backed out of it. But Roxy is awesome.
Yeah,
she's
a great
player and a wonderful girl. I just saw her. We did a festival.
So what was the songwriting process for that record? Like, did Dave have ideas? Did you bring him the ideas?
We go into Dave's basement, we hang out, start playing some stuff. He'd come running down the stairs. Ah, that sounds like a verse. Now think of a chorus. We go, okay, that's a chorus. Now come over the bridge. Back up again, and he'd be smoking some pretty serious spliffage there, but he was enjoying himself. And then at the end of the day, we had a garage full of beer left over from the US Festival, which had been about 4 or 5 years earlier.
It was like 83, and you're like 85, 86.
Yeah, so it was all skunk, because it was in the garage, the un-air-conditioned garage in Pasadena. And so, but we would sit around in a circle drinking a skunk beer, Steve telling Frank Zappa stories, Greg telling his stories, me telling my stories, and Dave, so we had a riot. That was a coolest thing about Eat 'Em and Smile. We really hung together. It was fantastic. So, and then the next day, we'd repeat and with more skunk beer. It was pretty cool.
Such a great tour, because I remember February of 87, Winnipeg, David Lee Roth Band. I saw the Eat 'Em and Smile tour, and I was actually able to buy a bootleg of it in a record store the next week. Some guy would, you know, he's sneaking a tape recorder. What's that?
87. It was 87.
88, I think, but the tour was February of 87.
It was. Exactly.
When we got to see it. And
what city in
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Because I know it with Calgary, Edmonton.
So Calgary and Edmonton are further west. Winnipeg is right above North Dakota.
Exactly.
It's the middle of freaking nowhere.
When we did get to Calgary and Edmonton, all hell broke loose.
What happened?
Well, because we know in Canada, there is a kind of a tradition of the
here we go.
Dancing girls
here we
in
go.
A club.
Oh, I think they call them peelers in Canada.
They do call them peelers. And that's how I learned that word, was from an actual peeler. But we
knew
it was
Chris.
An incredible... I'm forever grateful
for Calgary, Edmonton. But we're laughing because
our home and native land.
I went to Airs in Tokyo, a famous place that we all know. And a couple years ago, I was able to buy Eat 'Em and Smile bootleg. Airs is a place that used to sell bootlegs, but the caveat was if any band members went there, they would give you free stuff.
Oh, dude.
We walked out of the boxes.
So that would be what her name was Junko.
King Crimson.
Her name was Junko. That's how she would keep it alive.
Crazy.
Unfortunately, that place closed now because of YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I bought the Eat 'Em and Smile, and I remember watching
those dirty apes.
And we were saying that the rule of the David Lee Roth Band during that time frame was always be fucking. And the reason why I say that is all the time, always be on stage, because here's what you guys are doing the whole time. You guys are gyrating, like you're making like motions, like everybody's
rocking.
That
was just left over. That was just an after effect from the night before.
It's like everybody's Greg Bissonette's drum solo. He's humping the drum solo. Oh. Dude, that must have been the funnest tour for you guys.
It was amazing, but
you know what Chris is trying to get?
Let me
you to say.
Say again.
He wants to hear all about we right?
No.
Oh, no, there was
whatever Billy wants to talk about.
One underlying principle, and I'm not saying this just to cover my ass or bullshit and PR, but we always It was all with respect.
Of course it was. Yeah. No, it was fun. No, that's the point. It was fun. What I'm saying, like, the gyrations made it so much fun. Like, I always say that the David Lee Roth band was the best, most technical party band of all time. Because it's a party, but then you guys did a solo. I remember you guys were both on your stomachs playing your guitar and bass, respectively, like a piano, laying down on the floor, dude.
I've seen the show, bro.
Sorry, man. But I was 16. I was 16.
No, but we, you know, especially in this day and age where, you know, we're concerned about women being.
Of course, but this was
Everyone was a willing participant.
The girls were in on it. Yeah,
and they were great. And some of them are to this day. I'm a married man now. I love my wife, and there's no going back.
And she's look. She's heard all the stories.
She's heard all
and
the stories.
He, you know, exactly. I've known this man for like 30 years. He's a charmer. You know, I'm a serial husband. I've been married like a million times. not a million times, but like I guess, you know, serial husband. I always had a girlfriend. Blah, 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 and always loved my women. But like somehow...
I was off
vicariously
the leash.
I lived through this hedonistic, but he was a charmer. He was like a Lord Byron of rock and roll.
Of course, but you guys were headlining arenas at this time. Like Dave came to town, and there was a buzz about this band, and it was exciting.
The buses would park at a hotel, and all the locals would see the buses. And you just seen that hotel bar that night. It was out of control.
So, with David. Was he always like super flamboyant too? Like all, costumes every day and
no,
all,
no,
like,
no, no. He was actually, you know, pretty laid back and you know, in the background and would let things come to him. He wasn't like, you know, there was on stage is one thing, but off stage, you know,
what kind of person
was he? A businessman?
Was he a shy guy?
Very
too?
Intelligent guy.
Yeah,
and he is a grandmaster, PhD in show business 101.
Great call.
He knows how to make it work.
Was he? Did he, I mean? When that spotlight was on, he was always on.
But was he?
Did he have like a quiet, introverted side too? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, we sit down and. Do a little philosophical talk here and there, you know.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was telling that recently, as a little aside project, he became an EMT.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he did, and I know him pretty well, and I know he did it just for the adventure.
Of course.
You know, he didn't really even
That's
want anybody
Roth,
to know about.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Just, well, let me get in an ambulance and go pull up on a shooting victim, and can I be the guy that you know, save this guy's life?
Yeah.
And he was always an adventurer above and beyond what you might expect from anyone. He would go in the jungles of Indonesia and with a couple of guides, and they'd be lost and
might not make it back.
Exactly. That danger, it was serious, real danger there.
There's another great story and as we wind down on the Roth stuff, but you told me a story. I actually met you in Clearwater, Florida, and you were doing John Petrucci's G3 when it first started with Portnoy, and he introduced me to you, and you were very great as you are now, and you told another story about something to do with the Roth tour shirts with this is a good one. Can you tell that story?
Well, he had a shirt with myself, Steve, Dave, and then Greg.
Yeah,
so
Billy and Greg are the nipples.
Cut the sleeves off, so I ended up being cut out of the picture.
Yeah,
it was just Steve and Dave. So I told the wardrobe girl, save all the photos.
Save all the scraps.
All the so sure enough, I went when the tour was done a few years later, I had a jacket made up with all my face. And that cloth all over it. That was my revenge.
Classic.
All true.
There's another very true story that just happened recently, which drives me crazy. When the possible David Lee Roth, Eat 'Em and Smile Band reunion was all set to happen. Can you tell us about that?
I was on stage at the Lucky Strike.
Bowling alley in Hollywood,
And Dave was right off the side of the
stage.
Did
you know he was supposed to be there?
Well, initially we thought it was me and Greg Bissonette. We said, hey, we'll do the Lucky Strike Jam. Well, maybe go up and do like some Eat 'Em and Smile stuff. Great, great. Hey, is Steve in town? Yeah, give him a call. Hey, Steve. Steve's in. It's great. He's going to come down. Great. Maybe we should get the guy from
Steel Panther
to come on and get
Ralph.
Ralph down. Great. It'd be cool. Cool. And, so should we call Dave? I go, put a call into him. See, I don't know if he's going to be interested in that. So like 3 or 4 days before the thing, he calls. He goes, hey, I want to do it. I'm going to come in and I'll sing. And the Lucky Strike Jam is the thing where you just go up and play. Mm-hmm. There's no sound check. There's
it's like
no
an all-star jam. With
you just go up, plug in, go.
You hadn't seen Dave in a while.
Yeah, easily.
Or perform with this guy a long time, right?
Easily 10 or 12 years. I haven't seen him. So sure enough, he got together with Steve, went over the song, make sure we knew what the
lyrics song were you going to do?
We're going to do Shy Boy and Yankee Rose.
Oh, killer.
So great.
Oh, and so we showed up, and I posted some stuff about the Lucky Strike Jam, and I had like all these old photos of Lucky Strike, the cigarette. You know, you got to be there. Make sure you get there.
Right.
They're telling my friends, don't ask me why, but you better be there.
Grab something to eat and smile. And be there.
I didn't allude to it. Right, and sure enough, the club made the mistake of just letting everybody in.
The word was out.
The club legally held about 500 people. They let the fire department let them get away with 7. They had about 1,200 people. So now, in a way, it was righteous for the fire department to shut it down because it would have been a problem.
Great White,
Rhode Island. You know, yeah. We were horrible. So sure enough, we're on stage, and Dave was off with the mic, ready to go. Curtains closed. The whole place is going out of their minds. Now everybody figured out what it was. We had a line outside as we were on stage, down Vine Street, curved down Hollywood Boulevard, down to who knows what. And there was a bookcase on the side of the stage you could kind of see through. And I saw flashlights and helmets and axes. The fire department, full regalia, came roaring through. Shut it down. Too many people in here. Stop it. So we said, can we pay the fine? No. Okay. So, you know, we thought, let me start playing. People play some song. Start playing, you know, do-do-do-do-do-dad. Yankee Rose, maybe the people, you know, the fire department. Well, there's the fire department. One of the guys look at me, make one noise and you're going to jail. I stop. Yes, sir. Sir.
Listen, if you were 25, maybe. But now, like going to jail for rock and roll,
no way.
Ain't going to happen.
So they shut the whole place down. But the great thing was me, Steve, Greg, Brett, and Dave went backstage and hung out. Mm-hmm. We had a riot. We talked about the old days. At the time, Dave said he was into it. He'd like to do something, but we haven't heard from him since.
Well,
if he ever does want to, we're ready to go.
There's nothing going on with Van Halen now. It would be the perfect time to do something.
It would be great.
Like, people would go nuts for that.
I would pay for that. Man.
I mean, dude, is so cool. Like I said, still.
Or, I mean, I would get in free for that. Well, that's what I meant to say.
Can I be your plus one?
I got you a full access pass, my brother.
Oh, man.
But, dude, I mean, like I said, the fire marshal disrupted rock and roll history. But such a great band. And one last thing about the Roth band. We were talking about this the other day. We did a podcast talking about Dio, about Dio's band, the original Jimmy Bain, Vivian Campbell, Vinny Appice, and Dio. And then how we said who made the worst mistake by disbanding the lineup that took them to the arenas, Ronnie James Dio or David Lee Roth?
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Because both, it wasn't Dave or Ronnie, it was the band.
Yeah.
It was the four of you guys that made it. And as soon as you were gone, I remember when the Just Like Paradise video came out.
But
there's no Billy Sheehan in this.
Yeah.
But I'm done.
It was Greg's brother.
It was
Matt.
Great player.
But Matt, because this always happens.
Yeah.
This always happens.
You're caught in the
between a rock and a hard place. But like, there's no Billy Sheehan. It's
the chemistry.
And even Matt. How much do you think Matt felt it?
It's the chemistry.
Oh, when he was on stage.
And Matt is a saint.
Yeah.
What a wonderful guy. What a great guy. Great player. He's with Elton John now.
Dude, he's played with ELO. Everybody. Yeah.
Awesome.
No, we're not disputing that. We're just saying the original chemistry of the four guys in your band and Dio's band, when one guy left and Dio, it was Vivian, and Dave, it was you, it changed the whole thing. Yeah. Was that a financial thing? And I don't want
leaving?
You to, yeah.
No, it was just the Skyscraper was a whole different world.
Mm-hmm.
It was click track. Everybody recorded alone in the studio to the tape.
But you did, you know, do you mind me fielding this question?
I did. I recorded the whole record.
Thank you so much.
You've only known him for 30 years.
I have. you did write Elephant Gun, right?
No, that was...
He wrote Shy Boy.
He wrote Shy Boy.
But like when you did the Skyscraper album, that was your last thing. That was your last hurrah, right?
Well, I contributed to some of those songs, but you know, it was... But it was, you know, Dave was smart, and he had an idea. If we do Skyscraper, that's kind of like a dance thing,
mm-hmm.
And we catch that wave of that dance music, which is coming on strong. He saw it, and sure enough,
it was 88.
We live in its shadow now. If he would have caught that wave, everybody looked at him as a genius of all
time.
That's
true.
Unfortunately, that wave didn't quite crest as it was getting towards the beach, and the surfboard flipped over the top. It did not make it. But I give him credit for having the balls and courage to say, you know, I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
But that was Dave.
Yeah.
He always tried to push things. I don't think Dave ever saw himself as a metal guy or rock guy. He's a showman.
Sinatra.
Yeah. He's the MC at a three-ring circus.
Yeah, three-ring circus. Exactly. He's the circus master. We have to wind down, but I want to ask one last question about Pat Torpey. You're on the tour now with Matt. Pat passed away. Obviously, your brother for 25, 30 years.
30 years.
I mean, obviously tough to play without him.
Very. Surreal, actually.
Talk about it a bit?
Yeah. Well, when we... you know, we had a lot of these shows booked already. We had Australia, China, Taiwan, Thailand, and Hong Kong, and this European thing. This, you know, like, these things are planned years in advance. And when Pat, you know, died, we were like...
Did he have Parkinson's?
He had Parkinson's for like about...
So because he was playing with you on certain songs that he could play on, and then Matt would kind of fill in for the rest,
basically,
right?
He could just sing.
Gotcha.
But when he first got Parkinson's, now check this shit out. Now, this is heavy. So when he check first got Parkinson's, he was shaking, you know, his right hand was shaking, left hand, and he'd be on stage, and we'd go like, whole lot of shaking going on, and we'd all like wince, and he'd like, what?
He's dude, owning it.
Relax, guys. Yeah. We're cool. So he'd be up there doing his thing, and we supported him big time. We were gonna quit if he didn't want to tour with us, you know, because of like, you know, because it's a mental, no, it's a physical, but it's a super mental thing too. I mean, he was like so depressed but we pushed him to like, you know, Pat, we're here for you, man, and we'll go on the road if you want, but you know, like, I think it'd be great if we all did this, you know, as like a brotherhood, and like it kind of motivated him a lot. I'm motivated.
It might have kept him going too.
Kept him going, right?
If I may interject for one second,
I was just going to say this. Sorry, because I'm.
Oh, cool. Do you think?
No, I'm just. I'm like verklempt, as they say, because man, when I heard. When we all went, you know, me and Billy are the ones that heard first, you know, from our manager. Then we talked to Paul. He was in Japan, I think. And it was like super difficult when we found out that he passed away. But when Pat had this Parkinson's a while ago, like 4 or 5 years ago prior to this, we were doing our Stories We Could Tell album. It was like the second one from What If. From when we got back together, and he had this like shaking, and he was uncontrollable, and we suggested that he do like this Rick Allen thing where we could build a kit for him, like he could play snare drum with his foot left, you know, whatever
he can do,
like,
yeah,
whatever like Rick Allen yeah. does, and Pat was like, no, I can't do that, and we rehearse at a studio called Mates that actually Pat owns with this guy, awesome guy, Bobby Brunner.
Bobby, yeah, great.
That like all the bands work at. So Pat relearned how to play drums in a different way.
Instead of his left foot, instead of his right foot.
Yeah.
He could use whatever limbs he had available, basically. Yeah.
Who the heard of. Does
but that's,
that?
And the fact that he still wanted to do it, man, that's pretty
who
cool.
Who does that?
What were you going to say, Billy?
And that's why I want to interject when Eric was speaking, because we're caught in a funny place, because we wanted to give him, you need a reason to get up and be alive.
Yeah.
You need a reason to get up every day. Yeah. And sometimes you got to push yourself. So when he's on tour, he's got to get up. He's got to get off the bus. Yeah. He's got to get on stage. He's got to sing. There's no backing down. The show must go on.
Yep.
And in a way, that was really good for him, because it kind of forced the issue.
Sure.
Pat, I know you're in rough shape. You're shaky. You don't feel right, whatever, but come on. You got to do the show. And that was, but after a tour and a half or two tours of that, it wasn't working anymore.
Yeah.
So at the end, he was kind of, and I remember I would watch him like a hawk going upstairs up to the stage, and every, and I would, while I'm playing, I'm always turning around looking over to make sure, you okay? You all right?
Yeah.
Because, and then eventually it was just became too much of a burden for him physically to be up there, because Parkinson's just wears you out.
Sure it
out.
Does. It
wears
it,
you
sure
out.
It does. It's energy. Just like, it eats you, eats away, but like, just gotta let your, you know, your fans know out there that we had this percussion kit on the side, right, of Matt Starr, our,
yep,
our guy's been playing with us for a while, and kind of carrying the heavy load for Pat. But Pat had this percussion kit. But I swear to God, I mean, we have this song, you know, Green to the 60s Mine, Colorado Bulldog. There's another one that's like, where the is the one for me? You know, like, meh.
Because you don't have him.
Timing. And Pat Torpy, you know, Matt is like busy doing other things, and sometimes he forgets.
But Pat would be there, yeah.
But Pat is the he knows the timing of the tunes. He used to call all these, when he'd play, he'd have like all these like detailed cool stuff that he would do, and he would call them ghost notes, right? And those ghost notes,
you like, miss them.
Resonated, man. Yeah. Oh man, I miss him. And
yeah.
And when we were on stage, I'm like, our last couple shows, I think we played Milan, Italy. We did a live album there, and then like a couple weeks later, while we're on tour, our last gig, I can't remember where it was, but November 24th on Thanksgiving, we came home. You know, all of us, I mean, me and Paul, very close to Pat. Very close. I mean, I love Pat. Like, he was a
sure,
brother.
Of course.
He was like the glue and the anchor for our band. But Billy Sheehan and Pat, staunch Republicans and staunch lovers of rock and roll. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, these two guys, when we got together, when we rehearsed once in a freaking while.
It's all about bass and drums.
Yeah.
Their chops, they knew everything. Every Zeppelin, every Kiss tune, every song. They were so tight. They were the rhythm section, you know? And they were brothers like no other, you know?
We grew up similarly. You know, Pat, his folks split up when he was young. He had a stepfather, same with me. We both went to Catholic schools, went through that trauma together.
Yep.
And we went and played in bar bands forever. We had pretty much the same set list. He was in Phoenix, Arizona. I was back in Buffalo, New York. Same thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he was just my closest friend I've ever had in music.
Mm.
I mean, Pat and I would sit down together and we'd pick up where we left off if I hadn't seen him in 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a good man. Oh. He was an incredible husband to his wife. Amazing father to his son. He paid his bills. He was a righteous human being.
Yeah, great.
He was never a drug guy at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And once in a while we could force a beer on him. But even that,
he would get heartburn after like that. Knock some beers back, and he goes, I got heartburn.
So will you guys continue in honor of Pat? Is that why?
We're going to talk about it and see what's shaking for.
Because these dates were already booked before Pat passed away, right?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you do, man, because you guys are a great rock and roll band.
You know, like
really are.
I mean, we've done a lot of stuff. We've done many, many.
Dude, 30
tours.
Years, man.
Yeah, Fozzy, man. We've done
years.
A lot of stuff.
On the record, the greatest band I've ever been in is Mr. B. Eric Martin is a singer. Paul Gilbert is the guitar player. Pat Torpy was the drummer. Another guy, Matt, is doing a hell of a job. So, in my mind, as much as I did not want to continue without Pat at all, I will certainly consider in the future a possibility of doing a gig here and there, maybe a short tour, maybe a little thing here and there. But I love Eric and Paul, and Matt has been a great addition to our situation in many ways. So we don't really know what we're going to do.
To wait and see. Last question for you.
Good answer.
Very good question. Last question. Like, what's your favorite?
First of all, you just winked at me.
What's
right
your
now,
favorite again? Song to sing?
My favorite song?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's kind of difficult. because I swear to God, I'm like, you're going to laugh at me and your fans are going to laugh at me. But like, I love singing to be with you.
Of course.
I know it's
dude,
so,
that's not
so, so super weird. You
it's
know?
Not but weird. Like,
it's the most soulful song that we sing that we do on stage. I mean, it's not a formulaic song at all. It's soulful.
You guys had the luxury that 10 million bands wish they had. Like when you played To Be With You, every time on the street, we've done four shows only, but I made sure I saw this. Okay, Billy's solo, I'm going downstairs to listen to it. Because it's a song for a generation.
Great.
It is.
You know, beautiful.
But when it comes to rock and roll and how we all shine and everything, I don't know, man. There's something about Colorado Bulldog.
Yeah,
it's kick ass. Because for me, it's like my part is kind of like R&B swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's high and golden. Rhythmic. But the thing that Billy and Paul do,
it's great.
It's like stupid. It's stupid.
Such great
it is still stupid to this day where I just go, what the f*** are you doing?
Billy, what's your favorite song to play with Mr. Big? And what was your favorite song to play with David Lee Roth? Last question.
Okay, I'm gonna be completely honest here.
Please.
To Be With You.
Nice.
We look out and we see thousands of smiling faces. We just played China. Yeah. There wasn't a person in the audience older than 35 years old.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable. In Japan, in Thailand, in Brazil, in Chile, in Argentina.
Alabama.
Woo. Alabama.
Knoxville.
Damn it.
And what about Roth?
With David Lee Roth.
That you played.
Rose was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was our breakout thing.
You know what my favorite is?
What?
Elephant Gun.
Oh, I love that.
When you go off on that solo, dude.
Love Elephant Gun.
We just listened to, like, our bass player is much younger than us, and he's like, well, teach me the ways of the world, old Jedi. I said, let me sit down, young kid. Let me play you Eat 'Em and Smile. Listen to this album. And as a bass player, he's like, oh my gosh, it's great. He's like, I got to be Billy Sheehan. I got to be Paul Gilbert. So, guys, thank you so much for trying to kick us out of here. What a great conversation, and what a great time playing with you guys.
Thank you for being on tour with us.
It was so much fun. Thank you.
What a great show.
Thank you.
Entertaining and exciting and sounded great, and you sang your ass off.
My DNA is a little Roth in there too. You got to be part of the show. Hey, how are you? Clap along.
You jump up on that ego ramp. I'm like right in the front row, man, like checking your shit out, man.
They told me tonight,
I love your album. I mean,
thanks,
like, when I heard
dude.
Judas, it kicked my
thank
ass.
You.
I love the tones.
Thank
of
you, man.
Your music. I'm not just great. Like, you know, blowing
no,
smoke up your kilt right
this
now.
This has been great. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I'm very excited. So thank you guys. And
thank you.
Hopefully we get to do it again
right
soon.
On. But right we on. Are going to see each other.
Tomorrow at the airport. It never ends with our sweaty gear. Woo!
Lamenting.
All right, Billy Sheehan's hitting the road with the Winery Dogs, the Who Let the Dogs Out 2019 tour. Of course, it's called that. It starts April 30th in New Hampshire. Follow them on the Twitter at the Winery Dogs. Also featuring Talk Is Jericho alumni, member of the Fab Three, Mike Portnoy is in that band, so go check them out. And you still got a chance to book a cabin for the upcoming Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2, setting sail January 20th. 2020. It's nearly sold out, getting closer. So you got to book now if you want to come on the best vacation ever. Come hang with all the amazing talent who's going to be on the cruise. Ric Flair doesn't get any bigger than that. The NWO, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac, Jake the Snake Roberts, Booker T doing his Hall of Fame podcast, joined by Queen Charmel, MVP doing his one-man show, Brad Williams, hilarious, is the host, Vicky Guerrero, special cruise director. It was her birthday last week. Happy birthday, Vicky. Vicky and Eddie's daughter, Shawl Guerrero, is bringing her rock and roll burlesque show on the cruise, the Vaudettes. Jack Slade is going to be there. We had a great time with the WrestleMania review. Do you want us to do more WWE pay-per-view reviews? Maybe we will. Eric Bischoff, Conrad Thompson doing 83 weeks live from the ship. Fozzy playing a trio of shows. Farewell to Fear is going to be rocking. Rubik's Cube, great 80s cover band, the best on the Eastern Seaboard. Killer Queens, the greatest female cover band in the world. Dave Spivak Project is back. Jared James Nichols playing some crazy blues rock. And how about Kickaxe, one of my favorite bands from high school when I was in high school. They're going to be there making their big return to the United States. DDP returns to host more DDP yoga workshops. Beyond the Darkness, hosting more creepy paranormal events. Lineup is awesome. Maybe even bigger and better than last year. It's going to be such a great time. So book now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Don't miss out. It is going to sell out probably over the next month or two. So book it now. Don't be left behind. Don't be left unsure. Come with us. And come rock with Fozzy, doing a four-show mini tour starting May 15th in Greenville, South Carolina at the Firmament. May 16th, Greensboro, North Carolina at the Cone Denim. May 17th, Virginia Beach at the Lunatic Luau. And May 18th at the MMR Barbecue in Camden, New Jersey at the BB&T Pavilion. July 12th, Mansfield, Ohio at Incarceration. September 14th, opening for Iron Maiden at the Bank of California Stadium in Los Angeles. More dates to be announced soon. Don't forget about Double or Nothing, May 25th. And don't forget Fight for the Fallen in Jacksonville, Florida. That is on July 13th. You don't want to miss that show. It's for a great cause. And we're tearing it up. AEW is raring to go. We're making it happen. And we will see you there. And also we'll see you on Wednesday for some more Paranormals. The Alternate Route podcast joins us to talk conspiracies, creepy things, horrific events, so on and so on and so on. So have a great weekend. Get ready for Wednesday. You're going to get your pants scared off. Until then, in the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll see you soon. All right. I'm the one who wants to be with you.